Good morning, and may it please the court. Beverly Dyer on behalf of Gregory Fair, and I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. The purpose of the Mandatory Victims Restitution Act is to make victims of certain criminal offenses whole. However appealing it may be from the standpoint of punishment, disgorgement of profits is not a purpose of the act or a valid basis for restitution. Here, Mr. Fair's gains
Wait a minute, in this case, there's more than disgorgement of profits, isn't there?
In this case, the district court, in our perspective, took Mr. Fair's gains, and not his profits, but his gains.
His revenue, and said... That's not his profits. That's much more than his profits.
His revenue is more than his profits, and said Adobe deserves that money. But it did not say what position would Adobe have been in had Mr. Fair not committed this criminal conduct. That is the question the court should have asked, and that is the evidence that the government and Adobe and or Adobe should have presented to the district court and failed to do so.
The statute language, the statutory language, refers to the value of the property.
The statutory language, I believe, refers to the victim's actual loss and the value of that actual loss. And the victim's actual loss...
Well, 3663A, AA... Or actually, AB refers to the order of restitution shall require that such defendant return the greater of the value of the property, is the phrase. And you quote that in your brief, I think.
And the value of the property lost in this case is lost sales to Adobe. It is not Mr. Fair's gain.
When you're talking about value of the property often would be thought of, how much money could you sell the property for?
Well, in this case, Adobe could have sold discounted obsolete versions of its software and chose not to. We don't know what Mr. Fair's sale of these products that Adobe was not selling, how that affected Adobe. How did that change Adobe's sales?
Assume a fair number of the people who bought the product from Fair would have bought the product from Adobe?
What is a fair number?
Maybe the number that would lead to the same amount of gross revenues. So if 50 people buy it at 100, maybe 25 people would have bought it at 200.
It's the maybe that I think was not shown here. I think
We're going to have to come up with a calculation here that makes sense, because it's going to have to be a workable rule, though.
Well, I don't understand. I have long forgotten any economics that I once learned. However, I think what we are lacking here is any knowledge about the price elasticity of demand and any kind of curve. Here it's actually the cross price, I believe it's referred to as the cross price elasticity of demand, which would be the substitute market for
obsolete. You're saying then just throw up our hands because the statute doesn't work for this kind of intellectual property
and let Congress fix it? We don't know that. But neither Adobe nor the government came forward in this case and said, we cannot show this. This is impossible to show, or this information is simply not available. We don't know that Adobe couldn't have shown a blip in sales during the time that Mr. Fair committed his, some little dip in their sales during the time.
Well, that's going to be hard with just one. I mean.
Well, how do we know that they don't track certain software? They have not come in and represented anything to the effect that they don't have this information. They may well track certain copyright infringers. They may well track certain types of copyright infringers. They may have various models of the price elasticity of demand for their products.
Common sense, right, that some of the people who bought from Fair would have bought from Adobe.
What is some? Is that 2% or 98% as we represent it?
Some's more than zero.
Well,
do you agree with that?
I don't know that for sure. I don't know that people...
Zero? Why? That doesn't make sense.
It may well not be zero, but we have absolutely no information on which to come up with a number between zero and 100% of those people who would otherwise have gone on to pay $650 for a current version of Adobe software.
You began by saying that the purpose of the statute was to make the victim whole. But I thought your brief and the cases you were citing were suggesting that in the criminal context, at least, the purpose is a somewhat narrower. I mean, it is not the same as restitution in the civil context,
where you
make the victim whole in all kinds of regards. And the district court here talked about taking away from Adobe the opportunity to control its distribution and things like that. So I thought the argument here was that the government has the burden to prove by a preponderance that there was an actual loss. And the question is, what is the amount of the actual loss? And unless you have some details, you can't figure that out. On the other side, I'm sorry to take so long, but on the other side of the balance is the notion that Congress didn't intend for this to become, you know, a trial in itself lasting for weeks in order to determine this, but rather, I think in that context, before we were talking about intellectual property, it was a fairly simple concept.
I don't believe this does parallel civil damages in cases, and when I say make the victim whole,
civil
that is
restitution.
Not restitution, yeah. Or, yeah, and I don't believe that this is, is the purpose of the statute is to make the victim whole in all respects. I do believe it is to determine actual losses from the criminal conduct, stemming directly from the criminal conduct, which is Mr. Fair's conduct, which is not all software piracy. And I do believe that the question that the court should have asked is, in what position would Adobe have been absent this conduct, and that the court failed to ask that question, and that there was
so
no evidence.
Adobe, if the record shows that Adobe wasn't selling these things, is your position that there was no actual loss?
I don't know whether there was an actual loss or not, but neither the government nor Adobe came in to say, there is some loss, we just can't show it. They didn't come in to say this information is too complex.
Your answer to Judge Rogers there have to be that there is no loss in that circumstance? If Adobe's not selling in the market. And your further theory that you explained to me that you can't figure out how many people would have participated in a different market.
My position is that no loss has been shown.
You didn't say, counsel, did you, that you can't figure out how many people would have purchased the new product had the knockoff not been available. You didn't concede that point, did you?
I don't believe that information is knowable.
It hasn't. You believe it's not knowable?
It has not been shown.
That's right. You didn't say it was not knowable. You said it was not shown in this case.
Yes, that's correct. I do not know whether it can be shown.
Because my view is it can be shown and wasn't shown. I believe it can be shown.
I believe that estimates of that there may be valid estimates of the price elasticity of demand in both the substitute market and in the
actual
market.
Well, I'll wait till your opposing counsel gets up, but I will question him. But I think there it is quite possible to show what percentage of people would have purchased the top line product rather than the knockoff if the knockoff wasn't available.
I believe that information may be even available to Adobe, but we don't know the answer to that question.
No, I understand your point.
And
but you're certainly not conceding that it's not capable of being presented.
No, I'm not conceding that it's not.
Your argument is it hasn't been presented in this case.
Exactly.
How would, assuming on your second issue, the net profits, how would we structure the formula for net profits in a case like this?
Well, Adobe would need to show not just gross revenues or gross profits absent its costs of production, but its cost of overhead, and it would have to show what it actually lost. Mm-hmm. And what it actually lost would be the profit to the company from lost sales, is our position.
I suppose the other question is, do we need to come up with a rule at this point? Because this is such a tricky area, and if you look at the cases around the circuits, they're all sort of sui generis depending on what the facts of the case were.
Well, I think
now we can, this broad definition, but I don't know how it's.
For example, there are some circuits in bank fraud or complex securities fraud where the court, there wasn't a lot of evidence presented, and the courts have sent the case back for consideration on the original record for reconsideration of whether or not actual loss has been shown or can be shown on that record or is too complex.
But
in this case,
go back to where I started, the statute doesn't refer to loss in this key section. It refers to value of the property. And wouldn't you think that there's potentially some difference between loss in value of the property. If I discard, if I throw something in the trash and someone else picks it out of my trash and uses it, I haven't really lost anything necessarily, but the value of the property may be the value of what was picked out and resold.
I'm not sure what property refers to in the copyright infringement context, and I think that the value of the property is, in this case, whatever was taken away from Adobe, whatever would put Adobe back in that position.
So the copied disk is then used, right?
Well, it's an intangible. The disk was not Adobe's. The disk can be purchased anywhere, and then a copy of software electronically is made to be put on the disk. So it's not that kind of tangible property.
If you go into a bookstore and take the book and go copy the whole book and then sell the copied book out front of the bookstore,
you've committed copyright infringement, but your theft of the book is a theft from the bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
It is that part.
Well, is there a loss of property in that hypothetical where you copy the book at a copier and then go outside the bookstore and sell the copy? Is there a loss of property to the bookstore?
I think the loss to the copyright holder is the loss of the royalty payment from sales of books that copy would have displaced in the market, so that sales of Adobe current software might displace, at the same price, might displace the sale of Adobe software at the same price by Adobe. One for one.
Just on my hypo, do you think that is a loss of property or not, of selling a copied book out front of the bookstore?
I think the loss of property is the loss of a royalty payment from a sale that was not made, otherwise made.
Loss of a royalty.
To the copyright infringed, to the holder of the copyright.
Okay.
All right. Shall we
thank you.
The rest of your...
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. May it please the court. Christopher Merriam on behalf of the United States today.
May I start right at the outset by asking, is it not the government's view here, as I read your brief, that the question turns on the victim's loss? Is that correct? That's what you say.
That's correct.
The amount of loss for the victim.
That's correct.
Not an independent value of the product. In other words, your brief is different from what Judge Kavanaugh started out saying. Your brief certainly argues that the restitution is the amount of loss the victim has.
Based on the cases that we cite in our brief, there's extensive discussion of identifying the pecuniary harm to the victim.
Right.
For the
purpose. Why didn't you start with this statutory language, which is value, as I read it, unless I'm missing something in the reading of the statutory language?
Your Honor, it's been our position that the interpretation of the statute has pegged value at the pecuniary harm to the victim. And
that may hurt you here.
It may, Your Honor, and I'm standing here realizing that that I should perhaps have led with all the cases are wrong. Rather than
there are not that many cases, and none in this circuit.
I understand, and as Judge Rogers pointed out, many are on relatively specific facts because of the analysis that's required to get at this sort of issue.
Well, let's go on and assume that you're stuck with your argument here, and Judge Kavanaugh was not the Assistant Attorney General to be able to present this case, which is a shame. Well, except I wouldn't want to lose him. But I don't see why it's so difficult analytically to show the actual loss to Adobe. And here's how I would present it. Why couldn't Adobe have a survey of 100 people who purchased the knockoff and ask them, how many would you have purchased the top line product if you couldn't get the knockoff? Certain number of people would have answered that question, then you would have had answered positively, then you would have some showing as to what Adobe lost on sales. That still doesn't even get to the second question, which Judge Kavanaugh pointed out, which is, even if you establish what the loss of sales would have been to Adobe, which is perfectly possible, and that's the cross elasticity point that Judge Rogers points out, then you still have to ask what's the profit loss, because the gross sale is not the loss, it's the profit, right? And that's not hard to show either. If Adobe lost 100 units of sales, then the question is, what's your profit on 100 units?
Yes, Your Honor. Initially, let me step back, and to Judge Rogers' point, we have case-specific facts, and I do want to point out that in his discretion, Judge Roberts below was dealing with a copyright case where we're dealing not only with the theft of that book from the store, but the reproduction and distribution rights that the criminal law protects in this case for the copyright holder. So that changes the analysis somewhat, because the rights that are being vindicated in this instance relate to the ability to reproduce and distribute. That's what Mr. Farrow was doing in this case, taking that opportunity away from Adobe. My second point, however,
the taking away from Adobe the opportunity to do what?
To reproduce and distribute their copyrighted work. That's the specific conduct that the criminal copyright statute.
I don't know. That's a loss. That's a aggravation. But where's the loss?
But Your Honor, in this case, and the reason that this becomes complex.
What's wrong with my hypothetical? That you could prove the loss in that fashion. You could do a survey of a certain number of people. Assume you get a pollster to do it. You know, plenty of pollsters. They'll be available in another couple months. And you have them go out and poll a certain number, a representative number of people, and ask them the question, would you have purchased the top line if you couldn't get the knockoff?
Your Honor, I would suggest that that would be a defensible way to present the item. That's not what happened here, and that's not the record.
I know,
nothing happened here.
Well, I would actually suggest that we do have a bit more evidence about the marketing, what Mr. Farrow's conduct did, and how that interrelated.
We have no evidence about how many people would have purchased the full price product from Adobe of the people who purchased from Fair.
That's correct, Judge Kavanaugh.
And that's very important right there. Isn't that almost the end then?
I would suggest we would not be here arguing this case today if that evidence were present or if we had the survey.
Yeah, if my aunt had will, she'd be a trolley car. You're not familiar with that legal maxim? It's an old one. You don't have the evidence, and isn't it your burden?
So let me suggest what we do have in the record that is evidence that can support Judge Roberts' finding. There is evidence that these are not distinct markets, although under the copyright law, Adobe has the power to determine not to sell the older version, not to support it. Mr. Fair set out specifically to identify customers, and in the record we have screenshots of his eBay sale where he sets out, here is what you will pay with me, here's what you pay to upgrade to the full price, and here are your savings. So he targeted that niche. We have some evidence actually presented by Mr. Fair about his eBay responses that said, oh, the upgrade worked perfectly. So there were at least, I believe the number was 109 that Mr. Fair's counsel referred to, shortly after their purchase, responded to eBay that the upgrade had worked and that they had saved the money through that lost differential
The price from Fair plus the upgrade was still half the price of the product, about half the price of the product if you were going to get it from Adobe, and a lot of people may not have shelled out the extra $300 to get it from Adobe.
It is possible that some portion of them would not have, or that others may have been diverted. There's evidence in the record about other Adobe products that were sold legitimately that were less full featured than, say, Adobe Photoshop. There was Adobe Photoshop Elements at a very similar price point.
How many people do you think would have purchased the full price product from Adobe of those who purchased this product from Fair?
Your Honor, I can't speculate based on what's in the record. I can.
An economic theory?
Unfortunately, I've never learned as much as Ms. Dyer has forgotten about economic theory. But I can tell the court that the number is defensible given the scope of Mr. Fair's conduct. And let me, and again, not based on the record, but on the back of the napkin considerations. If Mr. Fair's 7,079 clients, if a third of them chose a reduced feature Photoshop elements for a similar price point, then say one quarter purchased the full priced item rather than going through the upgrade process, and the remaining 40 some odd percent of those 7,000 people just decided not to buy any photo enhancement or web design from Adobe. We're still talking about roughly $1.5 million, $1.47 million in sales that would have accrued to Adobe on those hypothetical numbers. Again, we don't have a lot in the record about the profit margin in this case. We do know.
Don't have anything on the profit margin.
I think we can say that there's not going to be evidence about a profit margin of an item that Adobe no longer sells. So that would be.
Your brief acknowledged you could do something on profit margin.
It's not a profit margin on the item it no longer sells. It's a profit margin on its top line goods, which under some theory are not sold because the knockoff is available. Let's assume hypothetically that one third of the people who bought the knockoff would have bought the top line if the knockoff wasn't available. Okay, then you're down to one third. Then you still have to calculate what Adobe's lost profit is on that one third. And that isn't the retail price.
I understand, Your Honor, and I will agree that there's not that evidence in the record. The only evidence that we
there has to be a remand at least for that, right?
I would suggest that would be an appropriate.
Why should there be a remand in this case? That's an interesting question, it seems to me. The appellant argues, look, it's a failure of proof. This is like a civil case. The government just produced no evidence, and we should therefore just conclude the government loses. Why should there be a remand?
I would suggest, and we'll rely on the authority cited in our brief, but this would be announcing a rule that's specific in the copyright context and for the resale of software, not a stolen or displaced good, not a fungible item, but one that's being reproduced and distributed.
But if we were to conclude that the government's position here was, I'm trying to think of a word that isn't too insulting, was sadly lacking in evidence, why should we give the government another bite of the apple?
May I make one side point in defense of the record here? There is evidence of Mr. Fair's costs. Now, we know that Mr. Fair is not entitled to, based on Che, entitled to an offset for his costs.
Yeah, that's Seventh Circuit. Absolutely correct.
And I'm not arguing for that position, but his costs for paying eBay and PayPal fees and his shipping, all of which are, you know, going to be higher on the magnitude of the enterprise, come to roughly 40%. So he was making roughly 60% profit. This is based on evidence produced by Mr. Fair.
What about Judge Silverman's question?
Back to my numbers, if I can just finish this thought. The even on my hypothetical numbers, which I would suggest are conservative, we're talking about a 50-50 split, a 50% profit margin. So it's defensible in that regard.
Are you suggesting that evidence of Fair's profit margin is relevant to determine what Adobe's profit margin was?
On the limited record that we have of this sort of thing, I think that is a possible
stretch. That's a real stretch.
Yeah, and the statute talks about the value of the property, loss or destruction. So the government knew when it presented its evidence in this case, at least what the statute said, and perhaps what the other circuits were saying about this, so that this is not a case, it seems to me, where you can prevail on sort of a range of what is defensible. Your burden is to present evidence to show this loss. That's the difficulty here. And Judge Silverman raises, you had your chance. Why do you get a second opportunity?
I would suggest that on this record, in the way that the argument developed in the trial court, in particular at the sentencing hearing, Fair was arguing for a zero value, no pecuniary harm.
But he also argued that you couldn't rely on his sales, that you had to look at what was Adobe's lost profit. So, I mean, the issue was joined in the district court, and the district court didn't accept it, but it was presented to him.
Your Honor, my hypothetical numbers are to suggest that there's a defensible position here, but if the rule, the legal ruling on this is that the judge below did not apply those facts entirely or wasn't clear about it, then it should be remanded.
Well, that's, your legal theory in the district court was that the gain to Fair essentially equated to the loss to Adobe, correct?
That's correct.
And that legal theory, if we conclude the legal theory is wrong, arguably, I guess we'll think about this, but what, under a new proper legal theory, what should you be given a chance to put in evidence under the proper legal theory?
Well, I think that it could be a very brief bit of testimony or perhaps even by affidavit about the anticipated or the profit margin, if there's the ability to extrapolate those economic numbers, whether by a survey or
you have two different issues you need to do. One, you have to figure out how many people would have actually purchased the full price product under some theory, as Judge Silverman talked about, and then second, you have to back out to net profits and not gross revenues.
And I think the second issue would be a fairly straightforward matter. The first one, and I would suggest under the rule that Mr. Fair presents, would be fairly complex, calling the actual purchasers to determine what they would have
done.
There's
also a provision in the statute that says when everything's just too complex that the district court can not impose restitution at all. Isn't that this a good example of what Congress might have been getting at in that provision?
I would suggest that it was not too complex in this case because we have one copyright owner, one victim, identifiable pecuniary harm, and our question is whether the pecuniary harm can be accurately measured by the amount of the defendant.
It's a knockoff product, though, even with the small numbers that you talk about. When it's a knockoff product, it's going to be inherently complex to try to figure out what the amount of the loss is, right?
If the government is required to estimate lost sales, and particularly in the case of a product that's no longer being sold because of the choice of the copyright holder, there's an additional layer of complexity. It may not be insurmountable in a future case. However,
is that your position now, that it's too complex to do? Are you saying this is too complex to calculate?
No, I'm suggesting that in a different scenario, we could come to court to do that. There's a potential that we will, end up with 80% of a sentencing hearing being disputed testimony about lost sales and the marketing schemes of the defendant in those sorts of cases.
Well, I guess earlier you had acknowledged, I mean, nobody's asked Adobe. I mean, it may have a little report it can give you and everything's done. But back to Judge Silverman's question about the remand. Are you suggesting that this case comes within our decision in Wren? That's where we said normally there wouldn't be a remand, but if on appeal, we announce a law, a rule, then that sort of changes the nature of the inquiry. And in your brief, you say if we come up with a narrower view of what is appropriate insofar as restitution is concerned, then you ought to have an opportunity to present that.
If the court's ruling announces a guidance that in this case the the evidence is lacking, it should have been presented. And
what I'm trying to understand is this, is we have Wren, but the context is a little different. Here, the issue was joined in the district court, and the government had its position, the defense had its position. If you lose on appeal, as it were, in terms of your position being the correct one, do you still get another opportunity?
I'm asking. We would argue that would be announcing a narrower rule in the specific context of copyright cases.
Well, but if we thought the rule that you got the district judge to accept was clearly erroneous, why are we announcing a new rule? In other words, let's say hypothetically, I believe that it was rather easy conceptually to produce the evidence that was necessary, as I have suggested, and that it was not presented. And there is really no good excuse for it. Why should there be another bite of the apple? I can see a situation where we had an existing rule and we're really changing it. But that's not this case.
Judge Silberman, and as I mentioned before, I think that your proposed situation is one of a range of fairly straightforward and perhaps not overly burdensome or complicating solutions to this. But I would suggest that it is a one of a number of possibilities that the district court can utilize. Based on this record.
But the point is, I think, that the district court did not utilize one of those methodologies, and why should, and at your urging in the district court, and if we disagree with the legal rule, why shouldn't that be it? Reverse, not a new chance. It's over. No restitution.
The only points I would suggest substantively, well, without conceding that we think that this was defensible by the record, but that if it is the case that identifying the defendant's gross revenues as a floor for what the harm could be and using that as a measure of the harm, the pecuniary loss.
That's an amusing term. The floor, you mean it could have gone up besides gross revenue? What would it have gone up to, $1 million or $10 million? Or
you mean ceiling, don't you?
Don't you?
I apologize. What I'm suggesting is that the taking in the case of the total course of conduct, the number could have been higher. Using my hypothetical numbers, the number could have been higher. So that would have been a safe, low number based on the record before the court. And the one other issue I would suggest in this case is that we are directed by Congress, of course, to consider the rights of the victims in these cases who are, in these restitution orders. So
yes, and the government has the burden to put in evidence to protect them. I mean, that's sort of a circular
rights
argument.
Rights of the defendants, too.
Yes. Thank you. Let's hear from appellant.
Thank you. Addressing Judge Kavanaugh's interest in the value of the property, I think this may demonstrate, and the difficulty of coming up with a number in the copyright infringement case may demonstrate why Congress did not even intend the Mandatory Victims Restitution Act to apply in the copyright context. Copyright is defined under Title 17, not Title 18. In this case, Adobe was not really the subject of the mail fraud, was not the victim of the mail fraud. Adobe was the victim of the copyright infringement. But perhaps Congress recognized that copyright infringement is not the type of property for which a number is easily definable or can be determined.
But you really haven't made that broader argument.
Well, I have made the argument that the MVRP does not apply to copyright infringement.
But we have the fraud count, right?
We do have the fraud count, but Adobe was not the victim of mail fraud, really. So in any event, if the court has no further questions, I did want to point out, I don't believe that the error here by the district court was a legal error and that the court can announce a new narrower legal rule. It was a factual error to find that losses were actually, the actual losses were represented by gains
Well, is that right? Because the test, the district court, you say this, the district court erred in applying a test that equated gain of the defendant to loss to the victim.
I think that's a clear factual decision that was, you know, when the district court said Adobe deserves the defendant's gains and that represents its actual losses.
Does it matter whether it's a legal error or a factual error? It's actually a mixed question. But
well,
does it matter for your purposes in arguing against a remand?
I think it does. For purposes of arguing against a remand, I think that the law was clear in any event to the government before the sentencing hearing in this case. And that
I don't think it makes any difference from your point of view. I took your argument to be if the government proceeds on a clear, legal, erroneous way to produce evidence and doesn't produce evidence that's adequate, you win.
I believe that's correct.
What's the difference whether it's a legal error?
The government should not be permitted to present new evidence and open the record on
that. I understood that argument.
Thank you very much. If there's nothing else,
thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.